So it may not be apparent to you because the episodes have been so spread out over the last couple of months. But the last three episodes of this podcast, actually the last two episodes and this one you're about to listen to right now, hopefully, stick with me. Stay with me, people. Because they form together a trilogy about a kind of the virtues of and the techniques of and the value of a kind of conversation that you're just about to hear a really good example of, if I do say so myself. If you'll remember, we had Richard Slatcher, the kind of brilliant, very cool researcher from the University of Georgia, on to talk about high disclosure relationships and especially between couples. And he was just a charming person all by himself. But he also kind of dug into a little bit of the science or the social science of why the kind of conversation you're about to hear can be so humanizing, can be so grounding, can be so healthy for people. And then in the second episode of the trilogy, the Empire Strikes Back. I know that was wrong trilogy. In the second episode, I explained a way of talking to people that I use quite a bit, both in my chaplain role back when I was on a university campus, and even now, kind of as a therapist, as a coach, just as a friend, as a parent. My goodness, I use it a lot. And so I talked about it in some detail, and maybe too much detail. Maybe you got bored. Maybe you're like, this is arcane. I don't know what you're talking about. Give me an example. Today is your lucky day, because John lined me up with a woman named Patty McDonald, who is a listener to this podcast, but who I had never had any encounter with and knew nothing about. And so it was the equivalent of bumping into somebody at a coffee shop that you liked and saying, hey, would you mind having a cup of coffee? Would you want to meet here tomorrow? I'd like to get to know you a little bit better. Or, you know, meeting somebody at a humanist gathering or at a hiking meetup and saying, hey, you know, would you want to grab a cup of coffee? Or, hey, you want to come over to the house for dinner? Or let's go for a walk together. And then it's a kind of a version of like, what would you do if there was somebody who you were pretty sure you liked or you were going to like, but you didn't know anything about them? And so what happens is in this next conversation, you are going to join me in meeting Patty McDonald. And over the course of the conversation, I think you're going to end up thinking that you know her, which is how I felt, and that you like her. And interestingly enough, I think you'll also feel like you, I don't know what the word is to say, but like affirm her and build her up. So I mean, I was really grateful to her for talking with me, but I think she had a good time. And I think you'll have a good time. And I'm just excited to get to it. This was a really fun conversation, and a conversation that hopefully, as you listen to it, you won't get so wrapped up in Patty's story that you don't also see like what I'm doing here, because what I'm doing here is something you can do too. So here we go. This is me and Patty McDonald, a virtual stranger, chopping it up on Humanize Me. I'm so pleased to be sitting down with you, Patty.
So am I. I've been so excited about this. So I am fangirling just a little bit because, you know, you've been in my life a little while now.
that's a weird thing, isn't it?
It is, because you've been on walks with me. You've been on drives with me. You've helped me do housework.
It's an intimate medium, you know, yeah. It really
is. I feel like I have a little bit, you know, I know more about you than you do about me. So we're seeking balance a little bit today, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And since you know a little bit about me, one of the things that you know is that in my life, one of my practices, especially when I was at USC, is like, you know, I'd be on campus, I would meet somebody at a lecture, meet somebody in a class, meet somebody who a kid brought to our fellowship. It came to dinner, we sat across. And at some point, I would somebody say to the kid, hey, would you want to grab a cup of coffee with me? And they would go like, sure. And then like we would meet up at some coffee place and we'd sit down and they would be like, what happens now?
Am I in trouble?
You know? And generally speaking, the conversation would begin with me saying something to the effect of like, tell me about yourself.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like there's no coffee in front of us, but if there were, I would be like, Patty, I know you listen to the podcast.
I do.
But I don't know that much about you. Like, where are you?
I'm in a small city in Ontario called Woodstock. So I'm about maybe an hour and a half southwest of Toronto.
Okay.
It's getting a little bigger than I like it because I grew up here my whole life and it's just getting bigger and bigger all the time. But yeah, so I grew up here. I went to school about 30 minutes away in London at a university in London. And then I moved back here and settled.
Okay, so you are where you started in some sense.
Yes.
Okay. So take me all the way back to like I was born.
Yeah, I was born here. My parents, they met through my mother being a pen pal with my dad's sisters. So my dad's family lived way, way northern Ontario, like really cold north. And his grandmother lived beside my mom's family in a little farming community near Woodstock called Embro. And my mom would look in on his grandmother because she was there by herself. She was a widowed woman by herself. And she suggested my mom start writing letters as a pen pal to my dad's sisters. And that's how my mom got to know all about my dad was by his sisters bragging about their handsome, strong big brother.
So seriously, like, so your grandmother's like, you're such a nice girl. You should be friends with my grandchildren. Like, yep. Here's their address. Write them
that's
letters.
That's right. Yep.
And you know, it's funny, like, you know, obviously nobody who's younger than us would understand the concept of a pen pal.
I know, because it's all instant now. It's not waiting a week for the letter to arrive, right?
And
it's social media.
Right. And people pick each other having seen all this information about each other. Whereas I remember in school, they would like assign you a pen pal.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm like, here's this person you don't know. And you would write like, dear Joe, my name is Bart. I go to the Roland Elementary School. And like, And you have to figure out like, and sometimes there would be a connection, sometimes there wasn't, but.
Yeah. Yeah. So grandma's kind of the matchmaker here, I guess you could say in a way, Grandma McDonald.
Yeah.
Tragically, my dad's father was killed in a hunting accident when my dad was 14. And when he graduated from high school, he ended up moving back down here to this area where he had an uncle who ran a huge farm to work to send money back to his family. Because my dad's family was very poor. When my grandfather was shot, they had spent their last dollar on sharing a sandwich and a drink for my grandmother's birthday. So he bought one sandwich and a drink. And they sat and shared it together. And that was her birthday present. And it was their last dollar. And the next day he was killed in a hunting accident. So they were quite poor.
Wow.
They were trying to farm way up north. And it's not great farming area, but it was free government land back in the day. And so it looked like a good deal. And we all know now that nothing free is actually free. So they were struggling.
But they were like Canadian pioneers, taking land that had not been under cultivation and turning
That's
it into
right.
a farm.
That's right. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. So dad came down here to work on the farm in the Embro area where my mom's family was living. And she met him face to face. Now she already knew lots about him from letters with her. You know, with his sisters.
Okay, so the letters were back and forth with his sisters. He had not become the pen pal.
Mm-mm.
But like, but his sisters had this like new buddy down there
yep.
in what's the name of the town again?
Embro. Yeah.
And so they were like, okay, we know this girl in Embro.
Yeah.
You should go and meet her.
Yep.
And so it was kind of almost like a setup.
Blah, blah. Well, you've got Grandma McDonald too. Of course, he's down here now, close to Grandma McDonald, and she's also plugging this relationship, right? He's working for one of his uncles on his, I think, on his mom's side.
Oh, that's right, because Grandma McDonald also likes the girl. She likes the girl too. Everybody likes this girl.
She really liked mom. So my mom was married at a tender age of 17. And
how old was your dad?
What was he? 4 years older. So 20, 21. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
So he came down, started farming with his uncle.
Yep.
Sending money back home.
Yep.
This relationship must have taken fire pretty quickly.
It did. I mean, it was pretty prime, don't you think? It was pretty prime to work out.
So they get married at 17 and 21.
Yeah.
And he's farming.
Well, he got booted off the farm.
He didn't make it.
Very, very early in the whole ordeal. Him and his uncle got into a terrible, my dad went out on a bender and showed up to work having not gone to bed at all, still drunk. And that was it for my uncle. He's like, you are done.
You're done.
You know, I can't have this on my farm.
Is this before your dad gets married?
Yeah, before dad got married.
Okay, so then he came down to farm with the uncle.
Yeah.
That didn't work out.
Nope.
So what was he doing when he met your mom?
I think that's when he might have started working with the installing hydro lines, electrical lines. And he actually was in a cave-in.
Like he was working on dams? He was working on dams?
No. They were digging ditches through the city to bury telephone lines and hydro lines.
Okay.
And one of the ditches caved in. And one of the fellows did die in that cave-in. So that was very young in his life as well.
But did he get hurt?
No, he didn't. He was able to get out. He was able to get out of the hole.
Okay.
So, mom was very young. And dad very quickly realized that he needed to make a more steady income. And he ended up taking a job at one of our local factories. And he spent his whole life from that point forward working in the factory.
What did he make?
And it was a steel, some kind of steel bending. They made exhaust pipes and tubing for school chairs and stuff like that.
Okay, so they're like steel fabricators. Like they were making stuff out of steel.
Yeah, and you know what? His youngest son works in the same plant today.
Your brother?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, he works in the same plant.
So he comes down. He's working with the uncle. He gets fired by the uncle.
Yep.
For being on a bender, by the way.
And
this probably wasn't his first one.
Correct.
so when he hooks up with your mother and they become friends and they start dating, like, is he like a rough dude?
Yeah, she was always the refined one, the delicate refined one, and he's the bushman. Rough and tumble bushman. Listen, he loved to have fun, he loved to party, and he loved people.
Yeah,
and so that was his whole life.
So it's funny because, you know, I grew up in the church and these stories always were like, yeah, he was a hard drinker and he got fired. And then he met Jesus and, you know, he became a good man. And you're like, nah, he was a hard drinker and he just stayed a hard drinker.
Yeah.
So,
you know, in the culture up north where he came from, you know, when it's minus 40 and minus 35 out and you just, there's not a heck of a lot to do when you're in the dead of cold. A lot of people use drinking as a social interaction there, right? It's pretty common.
My wife grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is pretty cool. And I remember going up there and we were walking around in her neighborhood. We came to this one block and there were seven bars. Like on one block.
like churches in your area.
And she was like, dude, this is the Upper Peninsula in the wintertime. That's what people do.
Yeah.
So he came down, he met up with your mom who, you know, he had good recommendations from her pen pals and from your grandmother. and they get married. How long after that did they have you?
I'm the second born. So they were 7 years before they were able to have a child. They had difficulty conceiving. And so my sister is the firstborn, and then I was 3 years after her. Mom lost a couple of children between my sister and I. And you know, it's really interesting. I just recently found out after Mom lost those two babies between the firstborn and me, she never really got excited about being pregnant with me because she wasn't going to get caught in that trap again of falling in love and losing it. Mm. And my dad told me he was confident, 100% confident that this time the baby was going to survive, but he couldn't convince Mom to buy in. And Mom said it wasn't until she was holding me in her arms that she accepted the fact that I'd made it all the way to term. So I think it's interesting that, you know, she was protecting herself from being hurt by losing another baby.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'm kind of wondering, like, sometimes people tell that story and they're like, yeah, my mom decided to kind of hold herself apart from me because she didn't want to get hurt. And she always held herself apart from me. Did she get over it, do you think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I mean, this is me jumping far ahead. I've grown up with attachment issues. So I have a difficult time, forming attachments. Like, I've never been married. I've never been in a long-term intimate relationship. And, I'm not a psychologist by any means, but I do sometimes wonder if, you know, sometimes some of those issues with attachment and trust start all the way in the womb. Yeah. You know, what do we know about that? We really don't know a lot, right? So.
Yeah. 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 You sort of go like, yeah, what if I was getting sort of messages of, I don't know about, like, you're on your own, kid.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And like, you're like, she changed her mind later and you're like, yeah, but it was already set.
Wow. And you know what? I've been fiercely independent my whole life. Like, I've really looked after myself my whole life. Worked, yeah. Gone to school, bought my own home. Like, I've taken care of myself.
Yeah. So were you the last kid?
No. 18 months after me is my brother, Jim. And then we're going to jump another 10 years for Dave.
No, seriously?
Yeah.
Wow, because if she's 17 and then it's 10 years before she has you, so she's 27 when she has you.
Yeah.
So then she was like almost 40 when she had Dave.
That's correct. Yeah. As a matter of fact, she was fully gray. Her hair was like, I'm quite gray too, but she was fully gray by the time she had baby Dave. So people were imagining that he was her grandson. So she dyed her hair black again so that people weren't thinking that her son was her grandson.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, so Dave and I are 12 years apart. So there's quite a gap between the two of us. And I left for university when I was 17, 18, right? So he was still quite young when I moved away.
Okay, but take me back. Like, I got you coming home from the hospital and and your sister, what's her name?
Linda.
Linda's there.
Yep.
And you start growing up, and then 3 years later, or 18 months later, Jim shows up.
Yep.
But at 18 months, you're probably not the most articulate person in the world.
That's correct.
You know, or self-aware.
The story I was told was I was a major pain in the toe because I kept running away. Like, the neighbors would call my mom and say, your toddler just walked past our house, and they're like four houses down, right?
This independence started early.
Yeah. And I have no memory of this, but Mom said they got so desperate in the summer that they ended up buying a harness and tying a line to the clothesline.
Yeah.
So I was on this harness clothesline like a puppy so that I wouldn't disappear. Apparently I ended up like almost a whole block away in a diaper. I'm a toddler and I'm in a diaper. It's not like Mom was neglectful. She had a newborn baby and another young daughter.
Yeah.
I was gone.
So at some point, like, you know, like I have a granddaughter right now. She's like 5 years old. Super cute.
Yeah.
And she's self-aware. Like, she's like, who are you? She's like, I'm Maya. And like, this is what I like. And this is what I want to do. And that's my little brother. I think he's super cute. And my mom, she's nice. And my dad's funny. Like she knows that she's living in a happy household. Like, she's aware of that. Mm-hmm. And I know of 5-year-olds who are like aware that they're in a dangerous place there's a lot of tension or whatever. When you became aware, like the first awareness that you remember as a kid growing up in that household, like what was the vibe in the household that you grew up in? When you first, like as a little kid, do you go like, did these guys get along? Was there tension?
There was tension. I feel like it grew worse as we got older. Because I did have some journaling where I actually say, I wish mom and dad would just throw the can in. They're just not liking each other all that much. And there was a lot of arguing and fighting and calling each other names and stuff. So I do remember, you know,
from the beginning, like you're like, as long as you can remember, there were struggles there.
There were struggles. Yeah. And it went in waxes and wanes. I mean, you know, I believe they loved each other. The love certainly grew after dad passed. It's so funny for me how that works. But
he's remembered well.
Yes. Yeah. And so they did. They had a few years where there were some struggles in the relationship. And, you know, my dad being a playboy and, you know, constantly wanting to be in play mode and mom managing a household of kids. There was some disrespect on his part in terms of honoring, you know, her role in the household of having supper ready at 5 and, you know, he'd show up an hour and a half late and not imagine that we should all be, you know, ready to have supper that much later than she'd prepared it. And there were just little things like that caused some tension. I mean, we had a happy house, but we also were aware of the fact that mom and dad had a lot of tension between them.
Yeah.
Right. And I felt it got worse. I feel like my baby brother might've grown up when, their disagreements with each other were at their worst, but I was off in university. So I was only getting, you know, once or twice a month exposure. And perhaps that made me feel like it was worse because I wasn't living in it. I was coming home to witness, you know, them feuding with each other and being unkind to each other. That was probably the hardest part for me, is they were unkind to each other.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting because I'm like, were they unkind? It sounds like your mom was kind to you.
Yeah.
Was your dad kind to you too?
And dad was too, but dad was the discipliner, right? So that I don't know if that still goes on in this day and age, but it was wait till your father gets home. You know, you're going to get the belt when your father gets home.
Yeah.
And he also had a tendency to, like, he was a work hard kind of person, and you have to earn your way. And of course, he wanted me engaged in sports because I could. And poor Linda, the oldest, she was not a sports person. So she had a little bit less of an intimate relationship with dad because he was out coaching us in ball and coaching the boys and in hockey and stuff. Like, he was really involved in the sports world, but you had to perform well, right? You there was no excuse for not performing well.
And you could play and she couldn't.
She just couldn't.
Yeah.
They made us play with her, and we hurt her a lot. We feel so bad, you know. We'd plunk her down on first base and then bounce a throw off her forehead, and we're just, oh, we've hurt Linda again. You know, we're going to be in timeout again because we hurt Linda.
So as you're growing up, like, Linda's ahead of you and Jim's right behind you.
Yeah.
So the three of you kind of had a whole decade to yourselves.
That's right.
Were you guys, do you, do, like, were you tight? Like, were you close to those guys growing up?
I was really close to my brother. I didn't understand my sister.
Okay.
Now my sister and I are best friends. Like, we talk all the time. And, I think after we lost Dad, we really kind of zoomed in to be the caretakers of Mom. And then Mom ended up with terminal cancer. And through COVID, I ended up moving in with Mom. The two of us lived together through her last stages of the cancer. I cared for her. And my sister was my rock through that whole thing. Of course, the boys were there to support me too, but it was my relationship with my sister is precious to me. And, but Jimmy and I, when we were young, we played all the games together. We played road hockey together. We played baseball together, and Linda was very girly and got hurt easily. So I didn't have a close relationship with her growing up. That came later.
Okay.
Now I would die without her, I think. But when we were kids, it was Jim and I. We had a game, John, called John and George. It was a make-believe game where we role played, but it was John and George. And I wanted to be John so bad, but Jimmy said I had to be George. And it was a big battle all of the time of me wanting to be John. No, you're George.
You know, it's funny when you talk about names, because the first thing that strikes me is like, your dad's name was Benjamin Franklin McDonald.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, I'm guessing he didn't grow up in a rigidly religious household. That sounds very free thinker to me.
You know, he really didn't. But in the later years, Grandma became a Quaker, and she was very religious. Like, I only knew Grandma as a religious woman, but my dad was not. My dad said his church was the forest. Yeah. That's where his church was, is in the forest.
How about your mom?
She was a United Church of Canada. I think it's like a Protestant, a former Protestant.
Yeah, but that's the hyper-liberal one.
It's very liberal.
Greta Vosper and all those people. Like,
you betcha, yeah, Greta. I love Greta.
Yeah, yeah. She's neat, isn't she?
Yeah, I really love her. So, my mom was a member of that church her whole life and attended regularly. Dad went for the high events, Easter, Christmas. That's it. That's all.
yeah. And more to do the right thing with, like my wife wants me to go, so I'll go.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And I attended with Mom. My sister attended too. I don't know how much Jimmy went, but Linda and I went with Mom, and Mom kind of faded out after us kids stopped going. She stopped going too. Later in life, probably in her 40s, 50s.
Did you have any affinity for it? Did you dig it? Did your sister dig it?
I've always had a huge curiosity about religion and faith, and I was a seeker. I was constantly looking for the truth, constantly. So I just kept on looking and digging and joining different churches and trying to understand different kinds of faith and, humanism.
Not just Mom's thing.
No.
So like, when was all the seeking? Was this like in high school, you're going to different youth groups and things?
In high school, I would go to the Catholic church with all my Catholic friends. I was an explorer in the United Church. Young university, I met the Mormon missionaries and I became a baptized Mormon. I was a baptized Mormon for 5 or 6 years, maybe a little bit more than that. And, then just kind of wandered around from church to church. The Jehovah's Witnesses were hanging out for a while. And
you really ran the gamut there.
Oh yes. I was running everywhere trying to find the truth.
Okay. Yep. So take me back though. You and your brother and sister, you're reasonably close buddies, and you go off to school together. And like, when you go to school, like, are you like, school, this is great. Like, books, learning, other kids. Did you like school? Or you like school? You love school.
I loved school, not my siblings. Well, my brother loved school because there were girls there and sports there. My sister loved school in that there were boys there, but she was not comfortable in the learning environment and struggled, yeah. struggled learning.
And he wasn't
she was married. She was married very young too. I think she was 18 when she got married. She was very young. So, and she said that mom and dad never really set an education. Like that was never on the horizon for her to imagine that she might go off to college or off to university. It was kind of always her path that she was going to find a good man to marry. So it was a completely different, like, you know, us being siblings, it was a really completely different upbringing.
So wait, so you're sort of like, it sounds like you're saying, I loved school, and it sounds like at some point you inculcated this idea, like, I will go to college.
100%.
Is that true?
100%. I loved school. I loved learning. I was a little bit slow. So, I mean, I'm the kid that studied because I was an undiagnosed dyslexic for a long time. Because we didn't even really have a word for it back when we were kids. I wasn't diagnosed until I was in third year university with dyslexia.
Did that make any difference? Like getting diagnosed? Like did they go like, here's how to read if you're dyslexic? Or like, did it help?
I'd already developed my own mechanisms to like I used rulers. I dragged rulers down the page in two directions and I read out loud, I had always had my own room in university because I had to read out loud in order to counter the effects of the dyslexia. So it didn't really help in just that it kind of explained things a little to me, why I was so different from the way everyone else learned. I guess it gave me some relief in that. But as far as providing tools back in the early 1980s, no. No.
How about now? Like you're still dyslexic, right?
Yep.
So like, does now they know more? Like, has anything that they figured out about dyslexia helped you?
I think a little bit. Like, you know, we have tools like e-readers. So now I can make the print so big on a page that there isn't room for my eyes to go to the wrong side first. So there are other tools, and you can increase the size of print, you know, pretty much anywhere. I had trouble in my work. I worked in the automotive industry and I reversed numbers and letters constantly. So it was a bit of a burden that I had to do my own kind of audit of my work, especially when it came to part numbers and stuff like that. Okay. So I just managed it. I guess that's the best way to say it is I managed it.
Yeah. So you're like, it didn't come easily to me, but I was just like really turned on by learning stuff.
Yeah.
Like naturally yeah. curious kind of person.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's where you go. Like, that's the lucky thing, right?
100% it was. Yeah.
That's really
I just
lucky.
Loved learning and yeah. I was good at it. I was good at it.
You know, I'm learning this thing and you know how, you know, you're like finding out that I'm dyslexic really helped me. I feel like there are a lot of people that listen to this podcast and I feel like they need to hear like that a lot of this humanistic, like, don't you just love life and isn't learning about the natural world, doesn't it fill you with wonder and awe? And like, don't you just want to build relationships? And they hear that and they go like, what's wrong with me? And I feel like for a lot of people, and you go like, oh, you know what? That's temperament. Like some people just, like they just have that temperament naturally. And other people have to work their ass off for the same thing.
Yeah.
Like it's a better way of life. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But like some people, like they just go like, some people are just naturally, they have a temperament that.
Curious.
Or happy.
Curious?
Yeah. 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 Curious, yeah. happy, and energized. Yeah. And other people, their temperament is working against them from the get-go.
Right.
And you go like, well, why do you talk about temperament that way? Won't that make them feel bad? You go like, no, actually relieves them of guilt because they think like there's some kind of moral failing that they don't love life as much as that happy, skippy person down the corner
you know, or yeah. you, yeah. and you go like, yeah, 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 but like for me, reading isn't, you know, like, and you go like, but I don't read as well. Yeah, but that you got sandaled with that one too. Like it's just in some ways we get certain cards and like,
that's right.
Some people get a better hand than others. Some people get a different hand, but like, I think it's really helpful for me to hear you say like, yeah, I just was curious. I just thought life was interesting.
Yeah. And you know, I've been kind of saddled my whole life. People who know me well, I commonly get, not criticized, but it's noted that I think a lot. You think about stuff so much. Like I'm a deep thinker, right? And it's just me trying to figure the world out. I'm just trying to figure stuff out.
Yeah.
I want to understand so badly. And I'm so curious about why and how.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a weird way, that's, you know, when you talk about like, I was a toddler walking down the street by myself and like, you know, like I'm independent. And I go like, you know, it may not be so much attachment, but sometimes when you're really interested in a lot of things, that makes it hard. That like, there's a whole set of men that takes you off the market for.
Yeah. right.
You know, yeah. And, you know, and a whole set of women too. That's just a feature that sometimes makes it possible for a person to be independent and to be content.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can keep my own counsel. I'm interested in the things I'm thinking about. And so sometimes like there's not that burning desire, like need to form that partnership connection.
Yeah.
And you know, and you go like, well, but I might've liked that. And I go like, yeah. But like, you know, in some ways, like if you'd have needed it, you probably would have settled or somehow made it happen.
Probably.
Cause I mean, you're a competent person.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, you know, that's interesting. So you go off to school and like, you know how you said like you and your sister maybe were raised differently, but like you were just different people.
You're absolutely right. We were very different people.
Cause I'm not guessing that your mom and dad sat you down and said, now let's talk about where you're going to go to college. Like we need to.
Heck no.
Right. They were interested in that or aware of that kind of world than they were with your sister.
That's right.
So where did that idea come from? Or where did, was there some teacher? Was there like, did somebody come along that sort of said, hey, Patty, I see you. I think you could do something with this.
Yeah. I feel like I had a, one of my sports, one of the coaches in sports, our sports isn't quite as intense in Canada. I think in terms of scholarships and stuff as they maybe are in the US, but, I had a coach, so many people in Woodstock would know Mr. Gillespie. To me, he saw something in me I didn't see in myself. He saw leadership in me. He saw a deep intelligence in me, and he was always encouraging me to shoot for the stars, to imagine higher. And he knew that no one in my family up to me had been to higher education.
Yeah.
And so he knew it wasn't on my radar, and he kind of put it there for me. Wow. And you know what, Bart, because of my curiosity, I was surrounded by some really smart people. I was attracted to smart people.
The other kids.
Because I wanted to engage. Yeah. The other kids I was going to school with who all had, the goal of going on to school, right? Of going on to university and college. So, by my personality, I was attracted to. I mean, here in Canada, we had snow days, and you know, you had the option on a snow day to just not go on to school. But I would literally trudge through 4 feet of snow to get to school because I was going to get the teachers all to myself because no one else was coming.
That kid.
I was that kid. So wow. I just loved the learning. And when I found out that I was good at it and that you know, there was so much open to me to learn, I went all the way in.
So So by the time you, like at some point in high school, like you're taking these classes and Mr. Gillespie's like, you could go to college.
Yep.
And did you just graduate from high school and go to college?
Yep.
Where'd you go?
So I went to the University of Waterloo first because I won a scholarship there. And we don't have a lot of that in Canada. So
wait, was it academic scholarship or was it athletic?
We don't have athletic scholarships. Right. So it was an academic scholarship. And it was not a school that was ever on my radar. I didn't even know there was a university in that town. So I went to the University of Waterloo for 2 years in a kinesiology health studies joint degree. And I didn't like the program. The beautiful thing about the program was, it was one of the very first in the country where you went to school for a stretch and then got placed in a workplace. So like a co-op program.
Yeah.
So my work placement was back in Woodstock at a center for developmentally handicapped adults. And I ended up working my entire university career. That place put me through school. So I ended up dropping out of the University of Waterloo because I wasn't enjoying the program.
But you kept the job?
I kept the job. And, you know, my parents didn't have a ton of money, so I had to do some working to help pay for my education. And I eventually transferred to the University of Western Ontario in London, which is just maybe 40 minutes down the highway from Woodstock, and got into the phys ed program, which is what I really wanted all along. I wanted to be a phys ed teacher. So that's where I landed, was at the University of Western Ontario. So
now, when you were at Waterloo, did you still live at home? Or did you lived in Waterloo?
I lived in Waterloo in a townhouse with, I think there were four other women.
So you had that like go away to college experience?
Yes, I did. I never had the residence. My parents couldn't afford residence.
You weren't on campus, yeah.
No, I wasn't on campus. They just couldn't afford that. Yeah. So, but I did have the moving out of home and living with other people and being independent.
Well, and it sounds like your parents weren't like, this is ridiculous. You shouldn't go to college. They like, it sounds like,
oh no,
it wasn't their idea, but they were like, okay, we'll help what we can.
Yeah, they fully supported all us kids and whatever we wanted. The problem was money.
Yeah.
Right? The problem was money. And it was a worry. I ended up having to take an extra year of school off to work to help pay for tuition. But so it took me 7 years to get a 4-year degree by the time I finished. So I guess it would be a 5-year degree because I went on to teacher's college.
Oh, so by the time you were done, you were like, I am certified to be a phys ed teacher?
That's correct. Yeah.
So that's what you wanted to do?
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you live at home during the time that you were going to?
Nope. The whole time I was in school, I lived out. I lived with other people.
And not by accident?
Like, no.
You just thought it would be better to live on your own?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I could have succeeded living at home. Again, at that time in my parents' relationship, it was not a happy household.
Yeah.
Right? My sister had been married and gone for a while. I went off pretty early too because I was a year ahead of everybody. I skipped a grade when I was in public school. So I went off to university a year younger than everyone else. I wasn't even drinking age yet. And that just left Jim and Dave at home. And, you know, Jim was out and about doing the sports and being the party guy and, you know, young teenage guy. And just left poor baby Dave at home with mom and dad not liking each other.
Yeah. But when you went to the second school and you're studying something that you actually are interested in.
Yes.
Did college turn into like a cool thing?
Bart, that's a tough one.
Are you just
for me.
Like, I was just doing what I had to do to get to be a physical education teacher?
I was so shy and introverted, if you can, imagine that.
No, this is surprising to me.
I know. I really struggled in social situations, and I never went to any of the big frat parties. I never connected well with the other students. And
now this is weird. Okay, because in high school, you had friends. The other smart kids.
Yeah.
And teachers liked you. And like you, so like somebody wouldn't have seen you in high school and said, that girl has social anxiety.
That's correct.
But college.
When I went to the University of Waterloo, the first one, I never really had a single friend. Not a single friend. Just my roommates, who half of them I already knew from Woodstock.
Well, I wonder what happened there. What was that?
There's stuff that happened. You know, that didn't just come out of the air. That there was stuff that happened. I was struggling all along with repressed post-traumatic stress disorder from being a victim of a sexual predator most of my childhood. So whether I had repressed it or, you know, if you believe in repression or not, I was having a real struggle. And I had a couple of big mental breakdowns during my university years. And then again, later in life, when it all kind of came out, the trigger that caused the memories to kind of come back, it was coming back as if someone was putting photographs in front of me and saying, you know, horrible photographs. And I'm going, is that me in that picture?
That looks like me.
And then they put in, that's me too. And that's kind of how it started to unravel for me when, you know, I was in my 40s by the time that late 40s, early 50s by the time this.
So the triggering trauma happens way later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It makes me really sad.
I have a lot of grief myself personally because I know that it's affected how I behave in relationships. And I know that I've hurt people because of my behavior that I can root back to. You just don't freaking trust people, right? You just don't believe when people care for you that it's real.
Yeah.
That it's reliable, that it's safe. That's, you know.
It sounds like when you're in college, you don't know why you're so timid and shy. You just know you are.
That's right. And you know, and I want to be a teacher, right? So I've got to be the person standing in front of the class. Now, you want to hear the kicker? I graduated with my teaching certification and could not find a full-time job. I ended up supply teaching for a couple years. So to make money, I was getting up in the morning, this is when we had telephones attached to the wall, right? Sitting with the phone in my lap, hoping to get a call to go off to supply teach. And then in the evenings, I was working in a drape making factory to try and make enough money to pay my rent. Because when I graduated from school, I tried moving back in with mom and dad, but I was 25, 26 years old by then, and I just couldn't live with them. I couldn't live with my dad. He still wanted me to be under his command, and I was a grown up, so I could not coexist there.
Yeah.
And so I never was able to land a full-time job in teaching, Bart. And I've retired from my career in the automotive industry and got offered a job to teach at the local college. So I'm now teaching once a month-ish at the local college. I teach working in manufacturing to criminals who are trying to get back into the workforce. So people with criminal records who are trying to find a way to get off the system. So I teach them about working in manufacturing and some of the expectations of working in that field.
Okay.
So it came full circle.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, and I'm like the you know, you're like, here's the kicker. And I go like, I mean, there's the front kicker, which is I spent 7 years becoming a phys ed teacher and I wasn't able to do that. Like I never got the shot.
Nope.
But then, and then the second kicker is, and now I'm doing this cool thing.
Yeah, that's right.
It seems like when this opportunity came, you've done some work, and you're able to stand up in front of those people and talk to them.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know that kind of the last religious community I was involved in was a progressive Christianity. You know, in progressive Christianity, we substitute the word spirit for God, and we don't pray, we meditate. It's you know, it's
yeah. There's no supernatural. There's not much. The God that you believe in doesn't do very much.
Yes,
he's just
that's right.
He's just like a nice guy.
Yeah. So they saw potential in me at that community when I joined there and invited me to start doing talks, and so I ended up. That's kind of where I finally stood in front of people and was really good at it.
Yeah, not surprised. I mean, like, you know, listening to you now, it's very easy to imagine this. But I'm sure if I would have known you in college, people that probably were, if they remember you at all from college, this person that was hanging in the back and not saying much, I have a feeling that they would be very surprised to see this.
You know, it's interesting, Bart. I don't really have friends from college except for my roommates.
Yeah.
Now, three of my roommates, if I got the number right, we still Zoom talk once a week. We got back together during COVID, checking in on each other, and we've never stopped. So my university roommates were tight with me and knew a different Patty than the one showing up for class.
As did the high school friends. Like, even though you don't.
Yes.
You know, right. Like, they saw a different side. Mr. Gillespie, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, like, this guy's like, you have leadership. You could talk in front of people. You could be a teacher. You know,
yeah. And I still have a group of people that are from my high school that I still see regularly.
Yeah.
Right. They know different versions of me. I think now I'm authentically into who I am at this point in my life. I'm turned 62 today, Bart. So
congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. So I feel like I've come into knowing who I am and not being at all intimidated by being out in front of people. And I have done that a lot in my life because I do have strong leadership skills.
Yeah, they were always right? there.
Yeah.
I mean, you go like, well, if they were always, it's, you know, there was literally, I mean, it sounds like at least this one layer of stuff really buried them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't really ever really weigh, Bart, the weight of me not wanting in an intimate relationship. It never really hit me hard until I ended up with ovarian cancer and I had to have my reproductive organs removed and I couldn't have children. Like, it was, now I was 50 something, I think 53 or something years old. It's not like I was going to start popping babies out at that age, but that was the period on a sentence that brought a ton of grief for me because it was like, now I have no chance of being a mother.
Oh.
I can't even describe the grief I felt. It was a deep, deep grief. Like, I lost my mom 2 years ago. You know, I said earlier that she had terminal cancer. We had moved in together and I had taken on the role of not just daughter, but caretaker. And we got to know each other again. Like, I moved out when I was 18.
Yeah.
Right. And they, you know, they didn't really know me. My mom didn't really know me. So COVID forced us together.
And in some ways, you didn't even know yourself.
True enough. True point.
Yeah. So then when you moved in together, it's like, hi, I'm Patty. Hi, I'm mom.
This may sound silly, but mom liked me. Like, mom liked who I was. And I really wanted that. I wanted my mom to like me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, when she got to know who I am now, who I became as a human, she liked that person. And I adored her. I absolutely adored her. So it was a gift. It was a gift.
And it's also, it sounds like it was in some ways a taste of intimacy.
100 Yes. Bart, yes, that's exactly what it was, because intimacy is hard.
Yeah, so I've heard.
It's hard.
Yeah.
You know, you don't like everything. You don't like everything when you're in that close.
I mean, it's a, you know, as you can imagine, like, you go like, if John broke in right now and said, do you feel like you know Patty any better? I would go like, yeah, I really do. Could I understand why you would enjoy some of the conversations that some of the people that we've had on? I go like, oh my gosh, like whether it's from the United Church of Canada angle or the, I went on all these, I tried all these different religions, or the, you know, even just the, like, I'm kind of recovering from trauma, you know? Cause like, those are all like, and the whole idea of like, this is a show a lot about connecting, and you're like, damn it, I have been trying to connect and overcoming barriers to connection and writing about connection. Like connection sounds like it's kind of your thing.
It is my thing.
Yeah.
It is my thing. It really, really is.
Wow.
I mean, I'm always looking to build community around me. I'm running a couple of pickleball leagues, and I'm very, yes, I know it's happened. I'm in the pickleball.
Yeah. So. It's almost like, it's so funny. Like, are you like, oh, okay, pickleball.
Playing a lot.
And but, you know what? It's doing such a, like, it's perfect, right? It's a perfect
it
sport.
It is. And you know, the thing I love about it is I couldn't find anywhere where we could just play women against women. It was always co-ed. And so I created a place where women could play just with women. And it's a beautiful community of people. Everyone is so supportive and so encouraging. I really love it.
Oh, man.
I really love it. And, wow. And you know, I didn't handpick the people by any means, but it's all word of mouth in a little town like this. But I just smile so wide when I walk in and see people showing each other how to do things better or cheering each other on. It's just such a positive environment, and it's a community.
Yeah.
It ain't church, but it's a community.
No, that's beautiful stuff.
Yeah. I love it.
It's so funny, Patty, because like, if I just take the little few bits and pieces I have, if I arrange them one way, I can easily make you a tragic story. Right? And if I arrange them another way, I can be like, the luckiest lady in the world.
I know. You know,
she's born with a good temperament and like plays pickleball now. And you know, like, ha, you know, and you go like, well, what's the truth? And you go, like, well, they're both the truth.
They're both true. Yeah. They're both true. You know, I don't think we can live 62 years and not have a regretless life. I mean, my life history made me inefficient and uncomfortable in relationships. And I know that I hurt people because I sucked at intimate relationships.
You say that over and over again, like, I know I hurt people. Like, do you mean that, like, people came close to you and they really loved you and you pushed them away? Is that
you
what you're talking about?
Yeah. You nailed it. Yeah. You nailed it. Yeah.
And they would be hurt by that. They would think like, I thought we were friends.
Yeah.
And you were like, I can't handle this. Like, you gotta back off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hard.
So, and you know, I feel sad about that. I feel sad about that.
Yeah. I read this book a few years ago called The Power of Regret. And it was a really interesting book about like how regret is a really important emotion for us because it's how we learn. For a learner like you, this would be a fun book to read. Mm-hmm. It's written by a really smart guy. I think his name is Daniel Pink. It's a really good book. It's, you know, it's like one of those Malcolm Gladwell-y kind of books.
I love Malcolm.
Yeah. You'd love this book. But one of the things that I came away with is that regret often surrounds decisions and actions that people make.
Yeah.
And so I sometimes though, you sort of go like, I didn't decide to push someone away. I was hardwired to push someone away.
Oh boy, that feels like a cop-out to me, but I get what you're saying.
Well,
like I feel accountable. I made decisions to push people away.
It's not your fault, but it's your responsibility. Somebody else puts you in that place. And you say, well, then why is it my responsibility? I go like, because no one else can get you out. And it isn't fair. It isn't fair.
It's interesting now, though, now, because now my awareness is higher.
Yeah.
And I have the ability now, especially after the push, to go, oh, shit, what did I just do? Like, is this old wiring?
Like, can you rewire it?
And can I rewire it? Yeah.
It's like, you're like, yeah, with my mother, I was able to forge a new relationship with a woman.
That's true.
And it was a close relationship.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to be. There was a time in my life when I wouldn't have been able to pull that off. But at 58, I was able to pull that off or whatever, like in my late 50s, I was able to do something that I couldn't do when I was in my 40s or my 30s, but I pulled it off.
True.
And you talk about there were all these times when I pushed people away and I go like, yeah. And then there was this one time when you didn't push somebody away.
Yeah.
They wanted to get close to you and they were open to you and you didn't push them away. You embraced them.
Yeah.
You've already scored twice in this game.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Thank you, Bert. Thank you for pointing that out to me.
I mean, don't you feel that?
I do. I guess I wasn't aware that you can make that connection, but I appreciate you drawing that together for me. I really do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm climbing the mountain of hope here.
Yeah.
Bart, I'm climbing the mountain of hope here.
Don Skippy. John and I were talking to that professor about a month ago about high disclosure relationships.
Yeah.
And by the way, this was a freaking high disclosure conversation.
Oh, yes, it was.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what he said was, he said, when a couple does that with another couple, they find out stuff about each other that they didn't know after 30 years. And what I find is that when somebody tells me their story, a lot of times at the end of it, you go like, then you know them a lot better. And I go like, yes, I do. But sometimes what happens is the person goes like, oh, thanks for pointing that out. Or like, you know, now that I'm listening to me tell you the story, I realized that I was actually pretty damn resilient in that situation. Or, you know what? Maybe I should have given that person a chance and I didn't. I always thought they were wrong, but now I'm telling you about it and it sounds like maybe I should have been more. We learn stuff about ourselves, but like whoever just starts from the beginning and tells their story.
Yeah, true. Like, I'll be honest, when you guys invited me to do this, I'm like, I'm not interesting. Like, how can this possibly be of any value? I'm not an interesting person.
See, and what's funny is like, you go like, I mean, clearly you're interesting to me, which that's not surprising. I'm a curious person.
Yes.
But like, what's interesting to me is watching you tell your story, going like, I'm interesting to myself.
Yeah.
You'll hang up the phone and go like, I actually am a really interesting person.
Yeah.
So thank you for taking the time.
I just feel so privileged and honored that you asked me to do this with you.
Yeah, and I feel privileged and honored that you were willing to talk with me. This is really, really very beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So that's it. So there it was. Wasn't she wonderful? Don't you just like her? I mean, that was just so meaningful to me to walk into a conversation with questions and to walk out an hour later thinking, I have a handle on that woman in some ways and I want to know more. And I think she likes me. And that's what I'm saying. Is available to you. Not every time. It doesn't work every time. And you know, you might say, well, golly, Bart, of course that worked for you. You had a handpicked guest and you also are a kind of a professional conversationalist. And I go like, yeah. But I wasn't always good at it and you won't always be good at it, but you will get better at it every time you try it. And in some ways, it's like those old report cards that I got in elementary school that would give you a grade for achievement and also a grade for effort. And the truth of the matter is that when you show up curious and you really focus your attention on another person, even if they're not able to respond the way Patty did, they register it and they register you as a person who cares, as a person who sees them. And that is no small gift to give to another person. And so, yeah, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. And I hope that it inspires you to the next time you're stuck on an airplane next to somebody, or the next time you meet somebody at a conference and you sort of think like, huh, I'd like to get to know this person better, but like, I really don't know where to start. I just hope it motivates you to just sit down and say, hey, tell me your story. Tell me your story. Because that little opening line might be a gateway to something really, really precious. I'm just flapping my gums at this point, because if that conversation with Patty McDonald didn't turn you on, then probably all the stuff we've been talking about the last 3 weeks aren't that relevant to you. And if it did turn you on, hopefully you can go back and listen to Richard and listen to my kind of how to do it thing and maybe even listen to this conversation and just go like, okay, I can try that. I've got some stuff to work with. Thanks for being part of this podcast. Thanks for me. I can't tell you the number of wonderful emails I've gotten this week from listeners and people that are sort of saying, could you make more content faster? Because you're going real slow right now. And we are. We're speeding it up. But at this stage in the game, I'll take those three episodes, put them together, call them a trilogy, and say, there's something there if you want to be humanized. And of course you want to be humanized. You want to humanize yourself. Otherwise, why would you be listening to Humanize Me? We'll see you next time.
This podcast is made possible by supporters of the show on Patreon. Get an exclusive extra episode every month for less than the cost of a cup of coffee at patreon.com/humanizeme. You'll also get a video newsletter from Bart and some extra goodies. Our patrons make this show happen, so please, if you enjoy it, consider joining us. That's patreon.com/humanizeme. Bart's website, where you can contact him, is bartcampolo.org. And this episode is produced by Katie Johnson-Smith, me, John Wright, and Bart Campolo. You could be larger than life. You could.